This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/east. That's EAST today for details.
Welcome to East Meets West, episode 191. I am Tom Merritt from a tin can.
And I'm Roger Chang, not from a tin can.
I am currently Roger Chang, I'm not currently Roger Chang, but I'm saying to Roger. I am currently experiencing an internet outage. I was about to record an episode of Current Geek with Scott Johnson. I was actually walking around with my laptop because I wanted to grab a cup of coffee before I sat down, and all of a sudden lost the connection. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I was walking around using the Wi-Fi. I need to make sure I plug into an Ethernet. Could not get the Internet back. Finally went and looked at the router. No connection. I've got no connection coming in at the source from Comcast. So I call them up, with the support. And I've got a business account. So I call the business line, and I get the recorded message says, oh, yeah, your node is out. Or it didn't actually say node, but it said, yeah, there's service outage in your area. Punch here and we'll call you when it's ready. I was like, oh, okay, that's real helpful. So I go to the Comcast site and I look and they have no status message anywhere.
Hmm.
There's no place where you can just like find out, oh, okay, 94610 area zip code is got this and we're estimating this, or we have no estimate, or just to get an update. Like there's no place. Like every web host I've ever paid for access from, I've been able to go and like see a status. Sometimes they're laggy on updating it, but at least I have a place I can go to check in, and it says, yeah, we're down, or this server is down, or this server is out for maintenance, whatever. Nothing like that for Comcast, not even for Comcast Business.
That's pretty bad, because when I had AT&T's DSL, and this is just like the home DSL service, not only was there a website, a page that you could go to see if there are any performance or connection issues with your immediate area, but if you could not get online, they also provided a phone number where you could dial in and it would give you a recording saying, like, yada yada, you might be experiencing slow speeds, especially during like the wet season, when especially out here the phone and the other connections would short out because the exchange would be under 3 feet of water. But that's really bizarre, and you're paying how much more, like 50% more over?
You pay more, exactly. And and maybe I'm missing it. Maybe there's a page out there that I couldn't find on the support site. And when I did, and to their defense, when I called, they did say, yeah, there's an outage in your neighborhood. But I wanted a little more than that. So I went on Twitter, and I made a snarky comment about it. And then I thought, well, they've got the Comcast Cares. Frank seems to be pretty good at this. So I did an at Comcast Cares, and I got Comcast Deet and Frank both replying to me. And then I got the information I wanted. Frank was able to tell me, hey, yeah, there's a node out. Looks like we might have a fiber cut in two different places. Are you guys having bad weather there? Because that could affect it. Hopefully it's not. Maybe it's just electrical, because that's an easier fix. But it could be 4 to 6 hours from the time of the outage. I can tell you exactly when the outage was, because I was standing there when my internet went down. So then I felt better, right? And I'm glad that Comcast has the Twitter support there, because then I got a personal connection. I got an explanation from somebody who knew kind of, about what level of explanation I wanted, and gave it to me. And of course I'm still sitting here without connection, because you know what? When a node goes out, sometimes it takes a long time to fix it. But, it's just interesting, in this world where it's like on Twitter, if you live in the Twitter universe, you get really good support. You get really personal support. If you're trying to use it the old-fashioned way on the web, can't find anything.
I don't know. It's it actually kind of illustrates or brings light to how vulnerable, our lives can be if we're, especially if we live it online, most of the time. I'm sure there's plenty of things you could do, and whether it's doing chores or something to get around that, but. I mean, if your business is online,
and to fill my time because I don't have the internet, that's not what's going on.
I mean, like, because you have a business connection.
Yeah.
If your business is online and you can't access it, I mean, I guess you would have to stock up on EVDO or 3G service or something.
Well, I tried that. I actually have an EVDO connection from Verizon, which I was on Skype with. Could not pump video through that thing, though. It's too slow to reliably pump it through. But even when I was trying to do audio, I kept losing the connection. So I ended up back on the phone. And here I am.
Sounding like you're on the phone.
Sounding like I'm on the phone, exactly.
So last night, Tom and I both attended a very cool concert featuring. I know. I'm waiting for you to chime in, but Jonathan Colton.
We went to see Paul. You're usually not so ornate in your speech, so presenting.
It's just
things.
A phone connection, Tom.
That makes you feel so formal, right? Paul and Storm and Jonathan Colton were playing last night in San Francisco, so we went to see it. What did you think, Roger? Is this the first time you've seen them or a second?
I have never seen them perform live. Actually, I've never seen Paul and Storm. I've seen Jonathan Colton via the videos that you used to send me, links.
Okay.
Jonathan was kind of what I expected. I mean, his entire show. And I enjoyed it. I wasn't kind of giddy with like, oh my God, it's Jonathan Colton. I really like Paul and Storm. I actually thought I really enjoyed. I don't know. I think because of the human beatbox. What was that guy's name?
Kid Beyond opened up.
Kid Beyond.
Two songs before Paul and Storm came on. Yeah.
But I thought it was kind of cool having him on as a kind of like a third act, but also integrating him into not only Paul and Storm's but Jonathan's act, especially when they did kind of the beat off, like between the synth between Jonathan Colton and Kid Beyond.
Yeah, we should explain what Kid Beyond does, because a lot of people are probably not familiar with him. But when we say human beatbox, a lot of times you probably think of really cheesy people like you'd see on an American Idol audition or something like that. But it's not like that at all. He has a device that he controls with his feet where he can loop his beatboxing. And he's an excellent beatboxer. He can do that classic beatboxing. He can make things that noises with his mouth that sound like snare drums and cymbals and electronic keyboards and all of that stuff. And then, on top of that, he loops it around with this device, so he's able to create a whole techno track just on the fly, live, right in front of you. It sounds like you're in a dance club. It sounds like a DJ has mixed this.
It's pretty cool. Basically, what he has is a computer interface that's a footboard. I think there are like maybe eight pedals or buttons on it. And what he can do is he'll imitate like, a synth snare or a bass beat. And he basically loops that. And then he can loop, seven additional noises that he creates. And he essentially layers these on top of each other. And then finally, he'll add his own spoken or vocals to it using the microphone. And I was pretty impressed. I didn't know what to think when they first brought him out. And it's like, I was kind of taking a wait and see attitude, but I was actually quite impressed with his ability. And
well, it really does blow you away,
And the little kind of duel that he did with Jonathan Colton, I thought that was kind of the highlight of that entire night.
Okay, So to explain the duel, anybody who hasn't seen Jonathan Colton perform, he has a song called Mr. Fancy Pants, which is kind of a silly throwaway song that he did when he was doing the Thing a Week podcast, where he wrote 52 songs in a row, one a week, and put them out as a podcast. That's sort of the underlying bedrock of material that he draws from for his concerts and for his albums. But Mr. Fancy Pants is kind of a weird song, and so to make it more fun to perform for people, he bought this device, and I wish I could remember the name of the device now, and I can't, but it allows him to pre-program certain sounds, like him singing or drum beats or that sort of thing, and play them back in different orders and do some loops and then things of his own. It's not quite the same thing that we're talking about that Kid Beyond does with the on-the-fly loops, although I think he can do a little bit of that too. He comes to do Mr. Fancy Pants, invites Kid Beyond up on stage, and then they get, like, halfway through the song, start doing a little dueling banjos thing between their different technology and the drum beats and what they can do. And it was It built to a pretty fantastic and sometimes hilarious level.
Yes, it was. It was actually pretty cool. I'll have to catch them again if they're ever in town within the next 6 months.
Well, Kid Beyond is playing here. He's local, and he's playing
February 5th?
February 4th.
4th.
Which is, let's see if I can remember the name. He's got a band now besides just himself.
Yeah.
Kid Beyond and the
Interstellar Love Army?
Interplanetary Love Army. Right.
That was it.
I think it was Interplanetary, possibly.
It was something about, yeah.
Anyway, so do a search for Kid Beyond. And if you don't know Paul and Storm and Jonathan Colton, do a search for them too. Now, it's interesting to me. Paul and Storm almost always open for Jonathan Colton wherever he plays. They've sort of really honed their act. Every time I see them, they get better. But they're always sort of playing second fiddle because everybody's there to see Jonathan Colton. And they know that, and they kind of joke about that when they're on stage. But they've got their own minions as well, and they've got their own fans. So Roger coming in cold, sort of being familiar with Jonathan already, and not as much, although you've met Paul and Storm because we've had him on East Meets West before. It's interesting to me that's the performance that blew you away, maybe because you didn't have any expectations where you'd seen Jonathan before.
I really appreciated the kind of spoofs they did with the Bob Dylan and the James Taylor.
Oh yeah, they do a section. They actually shortened it a little yesterday. Sometimes they've got a couple more that they throw in where they do like short imitation of famous people singing in certain odd situations, like James Taylor on fire or Bob Dylan caught in a well. They used to also do some. I think they used to do advertising as kind of a similar, like jingles that you never hear.
And one or both of them are advertising or marketing.
Well, Storm, yesterday, last night on stage, Storm said, "I'm in advertising." I don't know if that's true or not. It may be. I was unfamiliar with that, or maybe he used to be, or something like that. I don't know, but. Good geek music out there. So, folks, you got your own favorite geek music. Let us know, subbrilliant.com/EMW. We'd love to hear about it. Some of my other favorites are MC Lars, MC Frontalot. Of course, They Might Be Giants. They played a couple of They Might Be Giants songs last night. Like you were saying, Roger, it's pretty cool how they all helped each other out, so to speak. It wasn't just like, okay, that band is off, and we'll never see them again except for a thank you. Like, Paul and Storm have always come out and sung some backup for Jonathan, and they were good at integrating Kid Beyond in as well. It was pretty nice.
Yeah, it's actually the first concert I've ever been to where everyone's seated at a table, which I found a little amusing at first. But I kind of appreciate the fact that you're on your keister for the 2.5 hours, I guess 3 hours it was.
Yeah, it was a nice long show. They played for a good long while. And that's geeks for you, though. They don't want to get up and dance. They sit, or geeks and nerds sit around and drink, you know, dark beers and eat nachos and laugh and sing along and dress up as zombies and throw panties at the stage.
Or boxers. There were definitely a pair of boxers.
One pair of boxers thrown as well. There's a line in a Paul and Storm song where they say, it's called "We're the Opening Band." They're mocking themselves and they say, "No one has thrown panties at us in this song." And of course, now everywhere they go, someone throws panties. Last night it was like seven pairs. I think that may be a max for them.
Don't Jonathan and Paul and Storm all have songs like part of Rock Band? Or
I believe that is true. I have definitely Jonathan does. Skull Crusher Mountain and Code Monkey are both on there. And Still Alive, the song that he wrote for the Orange Box.
For Portal, the end of Portal, the game.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, don't we, Roger?
Yes, we want to take a pause and thank Audible.com because it's sponsoring today's show. Audible.com is the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like East Meets West. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/east, that's EAST, to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. So just check out audiblepodcast.com/east for your free audiobook. And I was actually up there earlier, and I was actually checking out the nonfiction sections that they had. They have a good selection. A lot of traditional like news figureheads like Chris Matthews and Rush Limbaugh, and there's definitely stuff in there that I was listening to, or at least the preview, that because I think pretty much all the they give previews for all the audiobooks. Am I correct, Tom?
No,
it's actually a really cool one, because typically when people think of audiobooks, they think of fiction. They think of sci-fi, fantasy, or a book that isn't necessarily a factual or historical. But they do have a big chunk of nonfiction, which I actually enjoy a lot. And definitely, you have a couple of favorites.
You're just throwing out nonfiction as a thing you can get.
Well,
there wasn't a title or anything in particular. You're just talking about nonfiction.
It's just every time I've ever heard about audible.com, it's because it's either a book for Sword and Laser, or someone is listening to a new novel, mm-hmm. in their commute into work.
Well, you know what I'm reading? I'm reading right now. Let me check and see if this is on Audible. I'm reading Jaron Lanier's "You Are Not a Gadget." I wonder if that's going to be coming as an audiobook as well, because it's really interesting. It is there?
Yes, unabridged, narrated by Rob Shapiro.
Oh, interesting. So Jaron Lanier is saying, "Look, we're getting this whole Web 2.0 thing wrong, and what he's worried about most is lock-in of features." So for instance, when we created MIDI, we were solving a particular problem, sort of particular to that time in the 80s, and now we've locked in digital music into the MIDI format. Now, I'm not talking about recorded music like MP3. I'm talking about the digital, like when you create music from a file.
Synthesized music.
Yeah, synthesized music. And he talks about Unix as lock-in, like the command line structure and files and folders and... we have locked ourselves into files and folders because of Unix, and it's hard to break out of it. And if we're not careful, we may be locking in a way of thinking with Web 2.0 that could be very deleterious, something that crushes the individual with the crowd. So, yeah, you may or may not buy it, but he makes a very intelligent argument of it being something to think about, something to worry about. And I wasn't sure I was going to enjoy it. I started it out, and at the beginning, I'm like, okay, but this I don't understand what you're reacting to. And then he starts to get into some of the examples of what he thinks could happen. I'm like, okay, I think he's on to something here.
You can see that with the way technology is, especially in the U.S. I mean, cell technology took a long time, or a cell phone technology took a long time to kind of propagate in the U.S. compared to other countries, because we had such a well-developed infrastructure for POTS, plain old telephone service. So the kind of need and desire to kind of move beyond that was kind of limited. But also, I mean, think about like things like 911. I mean, only recently, did 911 become, is it now mandatory on all cell phone
services? Right, E911 has now become fairly reliable, which even just a couple of years ago was not true. It took some doing to get it in there, and it's still not perfect. It's still sort of a port, in a way, of the old 911 system into the new VoIP and cell system. But the other thing that I think is interesting here is the lighter ways of thinking. I mean, those are good examples of real, practical things that we had a hard time breaking out of. But just like that thing about that he said about the files, and how no one can conceive of how to organize your computer without thinking of a directory structure, without thinking of files. And mm-hmm. there were attempts to do it without files in the early days of the personal computer. But because Unix was there, and Unix used a file system, that everybody's like, well, but that's familiar, and it's easy to you know, get guys who are used to Unix to use this, and so, and that's how lock-in happens. It's a conceptual lock-in, not even just a practical.
Oh no, I mean, think about the way we like, if any online video distribution site. I mean, a lot of them still use the kind of the same conceits that we have for traditional television. We have channels,
yeah.
We have seasons, we have a two-parter. I mean, there's a lot of things that are carried over, and I think maybe with time a lot of that might change. I don't know. It's, you know, as people who are born into an age where things like prime time no longer hold sway. It's like, oh, mom, dad, what's prime time? Well, prime time was a specific hour of the evening where everyone had to watch TV in order to catch, you know, a specific event on TV, be it a talk show, a miniseries, something. You know, you physically had to be somewhere in order to catch it. You could not wait. You cannot watch it at a different time. And think the ability to kind of have stuff more customized to people's, you know, personal schedules, I think, might go a long way. I don't know, to help change that.
I don't know if that's such a good example of the kind of thing we're talking about, though, because primetime is something we've already broken out of. I mean, with the VCR sort of broke us out of the idea of having to watch something at a particular time. But I think where your analogy could still work is the idea of our new shows being delivered on a daily schedule, mostly in the evening, right? So so forget about prime time as a term, maybe even, or even it stays around as a term, but forget about it as a period of time. But we talk about prime time shows in the future, and we talk about, like, oh, those shows get delivered on Thursday. That's, you know, I mean, I'm talking way in the future, right? When everything we watch and consume is downloaded or streamed, they still come out in the evening on Thursday, because that's when prime time was always at its strongest. And there may not be a reason for that in the future, right?
Mean, having looked at our you know, the work I've done, the distribution numbers, I mean, you know, Thursday is still kind of strong. I mean, I'm not sure if it's because people are kind of wired for that because of so many decades of TV programming, but I mean, shows that do well tend to do well on specific days, which is why, you know, we've shuffled, you know, certain release schedules for certain shows throughout the week in order to kind of load balance specific shows.
What you're saying there actually is contradictory. It says this isn't a conceptual lock-in that happened. This is just human behavior.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, you know, if human behavior, I mean, because it's kind of dictated by the weekend. I mean, the concept of the weekend, you know,
the weekend is a conceptual lock-in that's survived since the early days of the Industrial Revolution, when the laborers, you know, fought for that time off. Yeah.
You don't think the concept of the weekend will become more and more, you know, somewhat anachronistic, where people will say, well, I'll work these days and I'll get maybe these 2 days. They might not be the same day.
I think the weekend is anachronistic right now. I think people work all the week long. They work all around the clock, but we still keep the concept of the weekend. You know what I'm saying? In other words, to get back to what Lanier is talking about, it's not about, you know, these examples of us using old-fashioned ideas in our newfangled world. It's about dangerous lock-in, where this idea of the wisdom of the crowds and the crowds are always right becomes dangerous, because we build all of our software and we build all of our infrastructure online in the cloud to take advantage of this crowdsourcing phenomenon. And then it turns out we didn't understand it very well, but now we've essentially crushed the ability of individuals to actually carry out good content. And I'm not far enough in the book to understand exactly where he's going, so it may be
kind of vague, because, I mean, you have examples of that throughout history where, you know, it takes... No, it's kind of interesting as you move closer to the Industrial Revolution, you know, this time scale for these things change. But, you know, we move from an agrarian society to an industrial one, and then from an industrial to a service-oriented industry that we have today. So, I mean, I'm kind of foggy on what he's...
Well, Well, no, no, no.
I mean, I understand what he's saying.
Well, what do you think he's saying? Because it doesn't have anything to do with moving from an agrarian to an industrial society.
Yeah, but it's
too broad.
Yeah, but what you're saying is that, you know, developing technology, you have to be careful because that technology will lock you either in a realistic terms, like because you can't move beyond the technology because everyone's so invested in it, you know, both money and just acceptance by other people. But, you know, conceptually, like, well, people can't think beyond, you know, you were giving the file tree system. But, I mean, you know, you can apply those kinds of concepts to just, you know, sociology, religion, politics. I mean, you know,
well,
people
yeah.
used to...
That doesn't negate his point. What he's saying is, right now, we have a chance to not lock something in. And you have a very small window before these things get locked in, and then they're locked in for a long time. So I think if I'm reading him right, he's going to start laying out examples that say, these are what we need to fight against, and what we need to stop enshrining. And one of the things I like that he's done so far is really railing against the mindless repetition of buzzwords on the internet, like crowdsourcing, like the tipping point, like the wisdom of the crowds, all of that stuff. He's like, it doesn't mean that they aren't bad concepts and they aren't usable to a certain extent, but we've enshrined them as these untouchable truths, and that's where
are they really enshrined as untouchable truths, though? I mean, I never got that perception. Like, maybe because I'm kind of weird, but I never kind of took that as
well.
Bible.
Forget what you think. Don't you think there are people out there that, and I know there is. I know some of these people who basically treat these as like, if you don't believe in this, you're an idiot, and you're going to get left behind.
Yeah, and I've also known people who said that, you know, the zip drive was going to be the next, you know, floppy format, and that would be carry us, you know, for the foreseeable future. I mean, one could argue that markets will help mitigate that to some extent by basically killing off.
We're not talking about products. I don't think that metaphor actually carries very well. We're talking about big concepts that lots of people, and I maybe you disagree with me here, but
I'm just saying I'm having trouble to kind of have that paramount, you know, oh my God, you know, once we lock ourselves in. I mean, it's not a unique thing in history, so it doesn't seem like, I'm not saying
it's not a unique thing in history, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't try not to lock yourselves into the wrong thing. You're saying, well, we've always locked into stuff, and you're right. And Jared Lanier agrees with you, I think, if I can make an argument for him. But what he's saying is, before you get locked in, you have a chance to decide what kind of stuff is going to become the standard and get locked in. And
yeah,
we're
but
at
sometimes
that point.
You won't know that until after the fact.
Sure,
I mean, you're saying
it doesn't matter. We shouldn't try to lock in the right thing.
We're gonna lock ourselves into something, you know, depending on what the situation is. I mean,
thinking, because we'll get it wrong anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll probably send us an email saying we're both idiots, or at least me.
Probably.
Who's this Chang?
Well, you've never read his stuff, and I'm only like, you know, a third of the way through the book.
Well, now it's on audible.com, so I'll probably check it out just so I can have something to draw upon.
If nothing else, it's a really interesting read, and he's a smart guy. And he is, if you don't know, I should have said this at the top, he's one of the pioneers in artificial intelligence. Virtual reality. So he is one of these guys who comes from that camp, who's always been about open source and making the web free and all of these ideas that are powering all this Web 2.0 stuff. And he's stepping back and going, wait a minute. Maybe some of this stuff we've been spouting for years isn't as good as we thought, and maybe we need to reconsider it carefully. He's not saying it's all wrong or it's all bunk. He's just saying, you know what? We may have gotten carried away by our own rhetoric and got disconnected from reality.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, I agree with him on all those points. That said, I don't think everyone assumes those particular value sets that he has as truth. I mean, that's why, you know, having a marketplace of ideas is one of the best things to have. It's because you have, you know, various viewpoints.
But I think what he's saying, and I personally think this is probably right, which is these particular ideas that he's identifying are the ones that are carrying weight amongst most of the people who are making the decisions about how we design all of this new stuff.
I'll have to read it or catch it on audible.com.
You don't think that. You don't think crowdsourcing is a big deal amongst the people who are driving all of the Web 2.0?
I do think a lot of those...
That's all I'm saying.
What I'm saying is that invariably the marketplace will eventually, especially if it's a for-profit kind of venture, will eventually kind of sift everything out to what the people actually want and will use.
We're running short on time.
All right.
Yeah, which is too bad because this is a really good East meets West topic. So I've got to throw out one more thing for you to respond to, because this isn't about the marketplace. The marketplace reacts after the lock-in. It's in the early design phase. Fewer people are part of that marketplace. Once Unix was done and file systems were out there, the broader marketplace didn't have a choice because everything was a file system. So this is one place where the broad marketplace actually doesn't have much of an effect. It has to do with the ideologues who are creating the stuff that's going to go into the market.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I understand the position. I'm not convinced. I'm not saying that Mr. Lanier is incorrect. I will have to read his book or listen to audible.com. Don't forget to use the podcast.com/east to kind of get a better sense of the scope of what he's referring to. I mean, a lot of these things, at the time, did people really think about file systems in that way? It was something new. I mean, it's something that you can only really look at 2020, hindsight 2020.
Actually, at the time, people made up a lot of different ways of accessing data.
No, I know that. But I'm saying, did people back then think like, oh yeah, they're going to have a set-top box that's going to run on this exact file system?
Well, let's learn from this and realize there's unintended consequences. A lot of this stuff was determined when no one thought it was ever going to be a big deal. Well, I'm saying this is going to be a big deal, so let's try to think about it.
All right.
And like you said, if he ever were to listen to this episode, he would probably say, you both are idiots, and you're totally misrepresenting everything I had to say.
My sister's going to come down there and kick both your asses.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening and bearing with the technical difficulties. Hopefully it'll sound better from my end anyway next week. Of course, Roger's end sounds great because he's on Skype with a decent connection, and he is being handled by the capable Twit staff. Thanks to Leo and all the folks at Twit for letting us do East Meets West live every Sunday at 5 p.m. right after This Week in Tech. Jammer B, of course, putting it all together. Thank you again, my friend, for dealing with my technical difficulties today. You can find everything about East Meets West at our website, subbrilliant.com/EMW. Put your responses to what we've talked about in there. And, next week we'll try to read a few more of those. I couldn't actually look at the website while I was recording this week because of my internet issues. So, anyway, thanks for listening and watching. We'll talk to you later, folks.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.